to another great episode of The Bourbon Road with your hosts, Jim and Brian, where they talk bourbon and, of course, drink bourbon. Grab yourself a pour, kick back, and enjoy another trip down the Bourbon Road.
Very excited to have BlantonsBourbonShop.com as a new sponsor for the Bourbon Road podcast. In fact, this podcast is brought to you by Blanton's Bourbon Shop. BlantonsBourbonShop.com is the only official merchandiser for Blanton's, the original single barrel. Looking for a unique gift? Blanton's Bourbon Shop has got you covered. BlantonsBourbonShop.com is your home for all Blanton's gifts. The Bourbon Road is excited to have PintsandBarrels.com as a sponsor of this episode, as well as our official custom apparel provider. Be sure to check out PintsandBarrels.com and browse their ultimate online store for bourbon lovers. Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another episode of the Bourbon Road Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Shannon, and today we've got a special guest on the show. It's been a while. We've been waiting for this to come about for some time now. We did get our samples in just a few days ago, and we're excited to have this guest on the show. And I think, listeners, you're going to be just as excited as I am to listen about these new whiskeys that they have. So today on the show, we have Barry Downing. Barry is the Chief Operating Officer, Partner, Master Blender and Crafter for Limestone Farms. Limestone Farms out of Georgetown, Kentucky. Barry, welcome to the Bourbon Road.
Thank you, Jim. Glad to be here.
Well, we are very excited to try your whiskeys. These whiskeys are definitely well-respected and well-revered in the industry. You're kind of making your rounds now with podcasts and YouTube channels, and right. And certainly getting your word out about your products. But we're super excited to have you on the show today. You're introduced to us by a very good friend of ours, Diane Strong from Bourbon on the Banks.
Right.
Darn excited to have you here on the show.
It's a great honor, and it's great to be recognized by so many people that have such, you know, a great palate and a passion for what we do. So thank you.
So today you've brought three different whiskeys for us to try, and they are all part of the Morgan Family Collection.
Correct.
But we're going to get straight to that first bottle today. And can you tell us what's in our very first glass?
Absolutely. Our white label, for lack of a better word, is our select batch. And this is our entry into the luxury price point range that we have here in the three of them that we currently represent. We'll have some others that'll be the sub $100 range in the premium and super premiums coming out here in the next quarter and through the summer and into the holidays. So, but these are kind of our flagships that we want to set an icon around. And this is going to be mostly 9-year-old juice in here. It's all Kentucky juice. You know, as our label says, we're Georgetown, Kentucky, Kentucky proud. And it's something that we hold near and dear to our heart. So this one, and as you go forward from here, all my products that we want to make here, we want to make sure that they're bright, clean, delineated flavors, but then there's richness and no gaps. If it needs a start and finish with extreme complexities, seamlessness about it, higher proof, but crafted so that the lack of the burn is not there. Should not. You don't have to sacrifice flavor for smoothness or richness is our theory behind it. And that's part of what our mission is to take bourbon to the next level, which is crafting and blending and not just, you know, a single barrel pick or, you know, taking row G, you know, of floor five from Rickhouse K1 and go dump it and put it in a bottle and proof it down and get a label on it and get out to the market. Nothing wrong with that. Just that good stuff. I drink them almost every day myself, you know. But what we're trying to do is to try to develop something that's going to have that little bit more complexities for the aficionado or the person who is trying to get into it. I approach it as layering flavors like a chef does, of adding flavors to it. I'm an old culinary school guy, so it kind of came second nature to me. So here we're trying to make sure this is a mid rye. So you're, 78-13-9 is the mash bill. The mid rye will add some richness there, but without too much interfering spice. Seems to be one of our tells on the back end is usually going to be a little bit of cinnamon stick in the notes as well towards the back. So you should have some stone fruit, a little bit of brown sugar, sometimes nice leather component, especially when you start getting into the upper ranges.
Well, fantastic. I'm already nosing this thing, and let's just say it's 110 proof to start with, 110.8. So it's not light on the proof. So when you go to nose it, you're going to get a little bit of that.
Yeah. I'm not going to charge you for the water. I could water them down, but I'd rather not. I'd rather let you add your own water. It's your money. If you want to make a cocktail out of it, light it up.
It has a nice rich nose on it. It's very pleasing. You're getting a little bit of that ethanol, but you're going to at 110.8 proof. You're going to get a little bit of that. But it has a nice spicy aroma to it. It definitely has kind of a subtle fruit sweetness, just very subtle. But you are picking up the extra age notes. This is 9 year. Mostly, it's got a 9 year component to it. Yeah, and it's you're getting those extra age notes, a little bit of that leather, not so much tobacco, but a little bit of leather in there, I think, for me.
Yeah, and some of my barrels will, at this time of year, especially coming out of the winter, some of them picking up some really pretty tobacco notes, and some of them, even a pipe tobacco on a couple of barrels right now that I'm excited about when I'm blending for probably for a May introduction into the market. But yes, I think you're absolutely nailing it, Jim. And that's what we're after. I want those richness. I want those uplifted aromas. And maybe that little bit of ethanol, there's about 8% of six-year-old of the same mash bill in that. And then a little bit of eight-year-old, but over 85% of that is nine-year-old juice. So I don't want barrel fatigue. I think that's the sin in our industry that so many people think that older is automatically better. Most people out there that are great tasters know that magic happens between that 6 to 10, 8 to 12, depending on the mash bill and how so much of it's about the quality of the cooperage.
Sure.
You cannot understate that.
Well, I'm ready to take a taste. Cheers.
That sounds good.
Well, it's got a nice texture to it. And I am getting that stone fruit you mentioned. It definitely is. It comes across up front. It's not real soft, but it does have a nice subtle fruit sweetness to it. I think that I feel it up front when it comes in. It gives a good impression on the mid palate. It's there. It's got a nice round flavor on the middle of the palate, and then that spiciness starts to come out on the back. And that's what you're talking about, like no gaps, right? It's not like it's not falling off here or falling off there. It's just kind of giving you that experience you want on all areas of the palate.
Right. Thank you. And that's where that second and third rewarding sips usually get those secondary and tertiary flavors that come back and revisit. And that's when I notice that you can really pick up long-standing note flavor profiles for several minutes on your palate after swallowing, which is great for a relaxing evening, celebratory, anything, but it holds up again to ice if that's what people want to put into it. I actually like dropping a small little rock in there, and it opens up that mid-palate like a flower, get it down to, to the old Pappy adage of about 106, 107 proof, and just opens it up and adds a whole nother layer to it.
I'm starting to get a little bit of the tobacco in this now. On the nose, it was more leather for me, but now I am getting a little bit of light tobacco on the palate.
Yep. Should be just really soft, almost like a Connecticut shade wrapper on a cigar or something. The oils are there. You should have some really nice legs on it. And that's one of the keys, in blending and crafting, especially on the blending side, is to get your balance between your ethanol and your fuse oils. I mean, fuse oils can burn you just as bad. So if you don't, it's about barrel selection at the right time with the right barrels for the right reason. And it's why it can take me a month to come up with the right batch, on this, between the barrels, because I don't dump the whole barrel, rarely. That one right there is 22 different barrels in it. And we made about 840, 856, somewhere in there with our sampling bottles, of that batch, of that release. But I had, 2 gallons from one barrel, 22 from another, 32 from another, 17, 8. I want to layer the flavors Kind of the key is to find, you know, 3 to 5 barrels that really play nice together. Sometimes your best barrels don't want to play nice with the others. So you just have to let them set and you come back to something later. Or I use it into my next level, my small batch, which will be, for lack of a better word, the best of the best of these barrels.
Well, I tell you, the nose and the palate really do mutually agree, I think, very much so. And I find that when I sip on it the second and the third time, it sort of really envelops this this well-rounded. It's a little bit drying on the back. Mm-hmm. Like I said, there wasn't a lot of sweetness up front. It's a little drying on the back. But, you know, at 6 to 9 years, the components being 6 to 9 years, you're not going to have any lingering corn sweetness to kind of come right in there and give you that that real sweet up front that you get to your palate. I love it. I think it's really good. I think this is more of a sipping whiskey. Of the Morgan Family Collection, this is kind of your entry-level bottle. Correct. This is it's going to get more bold and more pronounced in flavor profile as we go forward with the next two bottles.
If I did my job correctly, absolutely, Jim.
So. All right. One more sip, and then we can be on our way.
All righty, sir. Not a problem. I'm enjoying myself.
That's really good. So, well, tell our listeners a little bit about Limestone Farms and the formation of the brand and the idea and the philosophies of the company. I'd love for you to tell us, you know, how you came into the mix and sure, you know, how things sort of got to where you are today.
No, I appreciate the question. Yes, it was founded by Darren and Bethany Dillo in Georgetown, and the Morgan Family Farm is where Bethany was born and raised. She's fifth generation. Her children are on the farm now raising it, as well as the sixth generation in a cattle farm. And then our other farm is the Jennings Family Farm, where our distillery is being built just down the road, about 5-minute drive away, still in Georgetown, closer to downtown, right down by Summerwind Farms, which is where, you know, American Pharoah was bred and the like. So right off the highway. And that's a sixth generation cattle farm as well, expansive 268 acres. So they had an idea to do a leather based, you know, that icon on that label is, you know, shaped like the international symbol for leather and coming from cattle. So they had this idea and they developed it and started bringing the brand around, and they started asking around for somebody that would to blend and craft with. And we met up, and after a couple months, we decided, we're like, all right, we want to partner together. And next thing you know, it's going to be a nice boutique-y crafted bourbon brand, and started working on sourcing on some barrels and doing what we're going to do. And next thing you know, other partners came in, like Bobby Sturgeon of Mako Labs in Lexington, a very successful businessman, as well as the Couch brothers, Tim and Greg Couch, came in over the, and it just kind of started snowballing. And next thing you know, old Jed's a millionaire and we're building a, you know, 33-acre distillery campus to become the second largest pot still distiller in the state in 2024, and producing upwards to 22,000 barrels a year of all pot still. And that's what we're going to do. And even after we come up with our own with our own juice going out there, you know, getting up to 6, 8, 9 years, and that's where the Limestone Farm brand here, I want to make sure we keep in their 6 years and above. Then I'll continue to buy other people's juice. And I want to work with other really great distillers and houses with their juice if they're willing to sell it to me, because I want to play with it. I want to experiment. I'm going to mess up a lot. And that's quite all right, because we learn and we fail forward in this industry if we really pay attention and listen to our barrels and listen to what our customers want. We can craft and truly blend a single one-time distilled product like bourbon. You know, the rest of the world, you know, scotch is still the largest selling volume whiskey in the world. And, you know, over there, the blenders make 3 to 4 times more than the distiller, you know, because that's what their business is built on. A lot of Japanese are blended. Obviously, Canadian is, Irish is, you know, a lot of these great world-class bourbons are blended. And now they craft and finishing, and I think finishing's great. I just think it's one arrow in the quiver of a crafter. You know, I mean, you can, and after 3 to 4 months, really, it's, you know, the barrels, depending on what you're using, aren't really going to imbue too much more into your whiskey. The whiskey's going to start overpowering that barrel. And that's where again, it's one quiver. So have some fun. Get around blending. When people come out to do a blending experience with us at our trade blending house out on Swords Road at the Morgan Family Farm, it's usually an experience like they've never had before. It's, you're not going to go in and say, oh, there's three, four barrels you get to go drop a thief into and take a dram out of. No, there's 40, 50, 60 barrels that are all open ready for you. Let's go have some fun.
Oh, wow.
And so that's what we like to do. We want to engage with people and let them engage. And so not every consumer wants to know how the sausage is made, and that's fine. You know, they can get Disneyland wherever they want in our industry and many others. And that can be a really great time. But the next level of the evolution, we think, of the bourbon industry is going to be about crafting and blending and getting that personal, get it in your DNA, get your fingernails dirty. You've never had dirty fingers until you've been blending for a couple of days, and it just, all the oak and the sugar and the, you know, everything kind of gets in around into your cuticles and stuff. It's addictive.
So I kind of heard you say, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I kind of heard you say that, you prefer not to draw like color within the lines. You like to, they like really want to experiment with this business, and you want to try things that are new and innovative. And but you're dealing currently primarily with, let's just call them, well aged bourbons, right? Correct.
Mature barrels,
mature barrels, very mature barrels. And do you think that limits your ability to experiment when you're dealing with barrels that are in a very tight range of what, 6 to 12 years is what you're saying?
Yeah, correct. And so that's where, great question. And yes, if it would, if we were doing that, but we do own some younger barrels as well. And we will continue, we will introduce other brands. I'm really excited about my Bloodlines range coming out here in May, which would be mostly 6-year-old juice with a little bit of the 9-year-old into it, but it's crafted. And again, when I say crafting, our barrels sit in a rickhouse, but for months before I ever going to put them into a bottle, I'm going to stand them up on their heads and integrate all those staves back into the whiskey. Sitting in the rickhouse, drying out with the Angel Sherry evaporation, you have dry staves on the top of your barrel. You know, you got 33 to 35 barrels in there, or staves in that barrel. They might come from 5 or 6 different trees, let alone what part of the tree. You don't know where it came from in the cooperage house, nor can the cooper track it. You know?
Right.
So those may be the best staves on that barrel, but they're now dry, no longer contributing to the whiskey. So I stand them up. They're a little more volatile. Some there's the given the yin and the yang when it comes down to crafting. There's no perfect example. Otherwise, everybody would do it, it'd be too easy. And that's why you fail a lot. But I incorporate that, and then I use those 6-year-olds to play with. But that's going to be a 94, 95 proof at $75 on the shelf. And the prototypes we're doing right now will start pulling next month and bottling in late April, early May is absolutely fantastic. So I'm going to work with, you know, some 3 and 4. I've got some young weeders that we're playing with and stuff for some really nice, very notable distillers. So yeah, you're absolutely right. We got to have it. And that's why we got some really nice, I've got some good support staff with me. You know, Andrew Isaacs is coming along, working with me side by side. I use him as my tasting bench, and he's a young man with an excellent palate and a good little excitement to him about blending and crafting and what he wants to do. And so those next generations will learn and will work. And, you know, just like the barrels, us old codgers can't keep doing this forever.
So. Yeah, it sounds like, Barry, it sounds like your knowledge is deeply rooted in the industry. It sounds like you've got some great experience. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? And
yeah, sure. I've been at this 32 years in the alcohol industry, the adult beverage space. So I've worked on 5 continents, lived on 3. I've worked in wine and on many a front, as well as brandies and cognacs and different things. And I moved here. I grew up in West Michigan. My family was originally from here, and we moved up that way. My grandparents moved up from Illinois, Southern Illinois, into Michigan, and I'm just kind of bringing the family back when I brought it back, moved back down here in 2010. So, and I've been working in the bourbon side of things and crafting and blending and ever since then. But I live in Australia and South Africa, and you know, been around 3 million airline miles.
So home today is in Georgetown?
Yes, sir. Yep. In Georgetown, right here where the new ad campaign is coming out. That's going to be the birth town of bourbon, where Elijah Craig made the first bourbons down here in Royal Springs. And, we're quite proud of that at the moment. So, and the water's beautiful. I mean, our distillery has on that farm, we have two open live limestone wells that come right up out of the water, and we will be using real limestone water in our stills.
That's fantastic.
Water. So
love it. Yeah. Georgetown. And we've obviously got some listeners out there that maybe haven't made it to Kentucky yet, or they have made it to Kentucky, but they've only been in, you know, Bardstown or Louisville or Lexington.
Great places.
Maybe they haven't ventured up to Georgetown yet, but let's just give them an idea where Georgetown is. Georgetown is kind of sort of the northern sibling to Lexington, sort of the northwestern a little bit, northwest of Lexington.
It can be downtown Lexington in 20 minutes or downtown Frankfort in 20 minutes. So
there you go. So pretty close to everybody. And, you know, there's a number of distilleries and people that are in the whiskey business that are in the Georgetown area. But you guys are doing it right. I think I love the whole idea behind the, you know, sort of the farm based distillery. I mean, that just really gets me. It sounds like you're building something magical there. And we'll get into the details later, but
it is exciting what we're doing. It's daunting, but it is about heritage. It's about bringing heritage home to where Kentucky brought its bourbon out of with Elijah Craig. You know, he founded the town. He founded the little college here, you know. So that's about what we're doing. So we're always going to pay homage to those who came before and the heritage of what bourbon's about. But we want to push that envelope, like you said earlier.
And you recently found out that you've got some heritage to an old whiskey man himself, didn't you?
I did. I mean, we've always, my brother's always been quite the genealogist on that it's ever since back in the 70s when Roots came to the airwaves, you know, and he's been tracking things. And then he dropped a little nugget on me right after the holidays that George Washington is our cousin and his grandfather is our grandfather. And so his dad and our grandfather were brothers. So that was kind of a nice little thing that came along through the Morgan families that we're married into here in Kentucky as well. And that's why we're trying to bring it together. We're about two generations off where Bethany Dillo, that's her family's the Morgans, the Morgan family farm. And we're within 20 miles of each other. We're most likely related. So we're trying to connect those things together. But there's a little blurbs there that we can't quite figure out. But there's a Downing, little small Downing Cemetery here in Georgetown as well. So the family's trounced around here since 1785.
Well, if George Washington's in your lineage, I would have to say that you're more or less required to put out a riot at some point.
You will be very happy to hear that we are. So,
very good.
Yes, sir. I love rye. I absolutely love rye, and it's probably my favorite thing to blend. I love how you can play with the cereal components once you get to 5-6 year old ryes. When they're young, they get that dill pickle, and you know, then into the mint. And there's nothing wrong with mint, but my personal viewpoint on rye, if it's the dominating character, you're missing out on so much beauty in a whiskey that can just And it's the spectrum of what the flavors you can get out of rye is fantastic.
And then it magically becomes this candied orange at 8 or 10 years.
Right? Oh my gosh, isn't that cool? Yeah, I could. Yes, absolutely. And I love the burnt orange rind on it and things like that, and the candiness that comes up out of it. It kind of depends. Obviously, that will play in if they're using honey or the old school way of distilling with the honey malting on it to get that initial ferment going quicker, breaking down those proteins. Some great guys like Tyler Wood out in Lewisburg does make some amazing distillate, you know, just amazing, small stuff, but he's doing it the old fashioned way. I love what he's doing.
So all of your spirits are coming from Kentucky at this point.
Correct.
Everything you're blending is coming from Kentucky and you're bottling it in Kentucky. So it's a Kentucky product.
Yes, sir.
Do you think that'll ever change?
Never say never, but on the Limestone Farms range, no, it will. You know, we don't have any plans ever to deviate from that Kentucky proud heritage and bring in that lineage and keeping it right as close as we can. We do have some friends in Virginia, and they would use the same pot stills that we are putting in, you know, big monsters. And some of those juices, absolutely fantastic, 3-4 year old stuff. So we're going to be doing some joint operations there. We're talking about other locations that we can bring Kentucky ingenuity and know-how into, even some of the Yankee states up north. You never know, but Limestone Farms will always be based right here in Georgetown, Kentucky, like it has been for 6 generations already.
Well, fantastic. Well, I've really enjoyed sipping through this first whiskey. Great. You know, this being your kind of introductory base level whiskey for the Morgan Family Collection. Yep. I can't wait to try the next two. They're going to blow me away, I'm sure.
I would hope so.
So folks, stick around. We'll be right back. We're going to take a short break. When we do come back, a lot more about Limestone Farms, and we got 2 more expressions to drink through, and you're not going to want to miss this. So we'll see you in the second half. Cheers. Looking for a unique gift? Blanton's Bourbon Shop has got you covered. All of their handcrafted wood products are made in their in-house wood shop with authentic bourbon barrels. Specializing in barrel-aged potent treats, they use Blanton's barrels to age their own maple syrup, honey, and coffee. Find the most unique gift ideas for your golf lover, cigar connoisseur, avid coffee drinker, and Blanton's fan. Want to win an authentic Blanton's barrel head? Make sure you sign up for the giveaway on the homepage of their website. BlantonsBourbonShop.com is your home for all Blanton's gifts. If you're a bourbon drinker, and I bet you are if you're listening to this podcast, you need to head over to PintsAndBarrels.com and check out the ultimate online store for bourbon lovers. Pints and Barrels Company was started by bourbon lovers for bourbon lovers. From spices to t-shirts, you'll find the perfect bourbon gift. Pints and Barrels proudly supports the Bourbon Road and invites you to visit PintsAndBarrels.com. Do you need a custom apparel or swag for your bar, distillery, maybe even your bourbon society? They can do that too. As a matter of fact, they print our apparel. We're so happy with the quality and fast turnaround. PintsAndBarrels.com, the ultimate bourbon lovers gift shop and branding specialist. All right, listeners, welcome back. We had a great break there where we got to, you know, continue sipping on the select batch of Limestone Farms, part of the Morgan Family Collection. I have to say, you know, when you drink that, you don't think about it being kind of the entry level bottle for the collection. It seems more like a premium bottle, but that's the entry level. So we're stepping up. We're getting ready to step up just a little bit.
It's still triple digit price, but yeah, it's you're making less than 1,000 bottles at a time. So,
well, let's talk a little bit about price. I mean, that first bottle we tried is on the shelves. You can find it. Mm-hmm. What's the price ticket on that?
Normally ranges anywhere between $115 to $125, depending on the state. So, you know, Kentucky is right in the middle. You can find some retailers playing it for less, depending on that's their prerogative. Tennessee has a great price. Georgia has a great price. Michigan, I mean, we're launching Ohio here shortly. We're in Texas already. California launches in another few weeks. Oregon, Colorado were already launched last year. And about a dozen other states that we'll be talking about coming on board in the next couple.
Okay, so let's sort of summarize that first drink. That first drink we had was the the Select Batch Morgan Family Collection. This is a Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. This was 110.8 proof. It's correct. The white label.
Yes, sir.
And it's available in all the places that you mentioned. Yep. And you could find it at or around $120 a bottle. Yep,
that's about the average, national average.
Okay, we always say, there's always a saying that is about, 110 proof. You're looking about $10 per 10 proof points, right? That's kind of the general rule. You're right there. You're right in that correct range for that. This is a premium product. This is a well-aged product. This is a 9-year, 6 to 9 year on the shelf. Yep. And I think in Colorado, they're getting all 9 year, right?
They did get some. Yeah, I did a special batch for them that they wanted. They blew through the first couple pallets real quick on the original. And they asked for it. And who might have said no?
Those Coloradans, they like that high proof whiskey. They like that well aged high proof whiskey, don't they?
Do. So do the Texans. I mean, the Texans. Yeah, so do the Texans. Mojada Mobeta, they say. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's start off this second half with a great pour. What do we have in our glass?
So that is our Mahogany label, and that is our small batch. So small batch, obviously, it's always going to be a blend. Of these, for lack of a better word, my best barrels out of the 9-year-old aged statement stuff. So that's, same mash bill as what you just tasted. I don't like to cross my mash bills very often. I do want to be able to have these products to, if people want to turn them into dusties and make them 25, 30, keep them around for a while, I want them to be rewarded. And that's just, again, my theory is that cross mash billing blends have a tendency not always to bond. It's like over charring, too much extra charred in your crafting staves or the like. I can make a brownie in a barrel if you want. And 2 years later, it's just falling apart. I mean, if you manipulate too much, you get these homogenized flavors, and we want clean, bright, delineated. So I do craft my barrels. I craft them with, only 4 things you can do: water, humidity, which is the same thing, air, oak, and that's it, time. So not everything's going to have an extra bunch of staves in them, that's for sure. And I treat my staves a lot differently than most.
This is a pretty minimally treated whiskey. This is basically you selecting barrels that meet certain flavor profiles and then blending them to get the right outcome. Correct. So let's recap the mash bill on this one more time.
It's 78 corn, 13 rye, and 9 malted barley.
78, 13, 9. And are you able to share the source distillery of this with us?
Yeah, we don't have an NDA and disclosures for them. And we really like this producer. They've been around a long time, one of the icons. And this mash bill has been around since 1870s, I'm told. So with Claremont Springs is where this comes from, is the distillery. So that is a very storied property and very storied mash bill. And I just ask people or when I'm presenting it, I don't tell them what it is first. I want them to experience the whiskey first. I don't want them to be, oh yeah, oh my God, that smells like XYZ brand. And that's nothing wrong. I have my bars covered with, 100 different brands. I appreciate them all, their expressions. But this is about crafting and blending and turning it into a limestone farm product. And so if it smells like or tastes like, where the distiller came from, I failed. And again, nothing disparaging about them. I love their stuff, but let them make their style and we make ours.
Well, we all know that the oak plays a big part. Absolutely. The master blender is I may get some pushback on this, but the master blender is just a little more important than the master distiller. I'm just going to say, because I think that blending the whiskey plays a bigger role. The maturation and the blending of the whiskey plays a bigger role than the distillation. Right. Yeah. Just saying.
Yeah, you can't make that proverbial silk's purse out of a sow's ear with bad juice, but if it goes in, if you have great juice and put it into a bad barrel, you're not going to have good product at the end to work with. There's a lot of examples of it. Some of it comes out just smelling like, muck and moss water and stuff like that sometimes. And it's kind of funny, but you can actually, if you drop 1-2% of some of that stuff into some of the other ones to blend it out, you get a whole another layer down in the mid palate sometimes. And you can use those things that taste like, you know, like muck, but I'd rather not. I'd rather not.
All right. Well, the Morgan Family Collection, small batch from Limestone Farms. Yep. It is 113.6 proof. It's 9-year-old whiskey.
Correct.
And let's check it out. Cheers.
Cheers.
I'm hitting the nose first.
It'll hit you too.
Oh my goodness. That's really something. I'm getting kind of a, like an earthy cherry.
Yes. I love the cherry. All three of the small batches we've released so far. And that's what I'm kind of looking for, because often cherry is in a weeder, you know, it's kind of,
yeah.
And that's what we're trying to do here is to craft things that break a little bit, but you're right. I get this.
But it does have that kind of earthy note mm-hmm. to it. It's kind of grounded. It's very grounded. And I like that. I'm going to taste it.
Cheers. Savory. And
oh, wow.
Thank you.
This is definitely climbing the ladder a little bit from the last one.
It's got some rungs on it, doesn't it? It does.
Yes, it does. Up. So this is cherry and oak and baking spice.
Lots of baking spice, yes.
Wow.
Almost a Moroccan spice in there, the baking Moroccan. I just love it. It's sassy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm getting like a little bit of a faint root beer note in the background, but it's more complex than the last one we had. Right. No doubt about it.
And you're stepping up, you know, $40 on the shelf. So it should be, it has to be.
All right. So the last one was, around $120. The yep. price on this small batch is?
It's going to run about $160 on the shelf.
About $160.
Range from $150 to $165 across the country, but the average about $160. And we make on that batch there, that was about 640 bottles made, about 640 bottles of that one. It's made from 15 different barrels. That's the third batch.
Wow. I don't think I would change a thing on this. I'm not sure that I would alter the proof, although I wasn't part of the blending process on this. I don't know what your thoughts were.
You drop a rock and it'll actually burn you. You get that down in the ones at about 90 in the low 90s, it sings beautifully, but that spice comes up even more. And again, for mid rye, it's singing beautiful spices. And that's, again, finding the barrels that want to play with each other. I'm glad you picked up that little bit of root beer note. I always like a little bit of a sarsaparilla kind of thing, because it has that earthy. And then it has little notes of sweetness in there. But again, it finishes dry. And it came out of the cast strength on this was at about 119, almost 120. And it sang really, really well at 116 too, as well. But I thought under 114, I think it's stout enough for most people to say, okay, I'm going to step up for a couple bucks. But then other people aren't scared away that it's going to be a nuclear bomb going off.
That's kind of the craft in it, right? I mean, finding that perfect spot, you know, where it just performs. And right. And I'll tell you what, this is, I wouldn't change a thing. This is a delightful whiskey. This is really... I won't call it a cherry bomb, but I will say that cherry is ever present in the palate and in the nose on this. And it might not even be the prominent note. It's just the one that comes to mind for me as I'm sipping it.
Yeah, I love nuances and layers. Again, if I have one thing as dominant, if it's going to have one dominant flavor profile on it, then that's $90 or less to me. It can be delicious. Absolutely. And
yeah,
I mean, you can go out and enjoy a killer bottle of $45, $50 juice. You know, there's good ones out there, but if you're going to drop a little bit more, you're going to sit down like you're doing right now and just enjoy it. It tells you a story. Enjoy that. If you can pour enough and then sip on it and enjoy it over the next hour, hour and a half, it's like reading a book. Yeah. It will open up and deliver chapter.
Yeah, this has definitely got that whole bourbon ball kind of flavor to it. I really like it a lot. It doesn't have that intense sweetness that you get with a bourbon ball, but that, I don't know, a little bit of a, like a cherry background. And like you said, nothing is like super prominent jumping out saying I'm a cherry bomb or I'm a, you know, a spice bomb or whatever it is. It's just everything's sort of playing on equal field there. And it's really nice.
Thank you.
And that, I think that's what makes it like a thinking whiskey, right? Yep, this is absolutely one of those that you just,
this is one
you sip on and you,
life gets in the way of so many good times. So this sometimes can help us.
I enjoy that. I love going out. And I've got a small room on the back of our house. It's a Four Seasons room, and it's kind of a quiet place. It's a secluded place. It's a place where I can go and be by myself, and I can take a dram with me out there and just sit down in a chair and enjoy a pour. I love doing that with a whiskey like this one, where it's got a half a dozen competing notes that are just, they're all trying to sing a little bit louder than the other, but they, nobody gets to be on top. They get a moment in the spotlight, and then they have to step back and let the next guy in.
That's right. That's right. I don't want exactly. It's like it's a good cast, you know, depending on what people have, you know, a good cast of a play, they have to work together. No, I say instead of having one big superstar on stage at all times, you know, they're going to more than times flop on their own. They don't have a great supporting cast, and it's there's how the barrels kind of come together that way. And sometimes it happens in one day. Sometimes it takes a month and a half to get the right ones, and then the weather's always going to work with you or against you.
And so you're telling me we're going up from here, huh?
What you're about to experience is like a, and yeah, it's a tater hunter's dream. You know, people call them unicorns, whatever you want to call them. But
oh my goodness! Before we get to that third pour, I've got just a little bit more of this one in my glass, and I want to savor it. Let's talk a little bit about Bourbon on the Banks. So, you were introduced to us by Diane Strong, who's the executive director at Bourbon on the Banks, and she told us, "Hey, Jim," she said, "Hey, Jim, you've really got to." You got to talk to these guys. They're doing it right. So we reached out to you, and this is how the show came about. Tell us about your relationship with Diane and Bourbon on the Banks.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Diane actually used to live in Georgetown, up in the community where my wife and my mother-in-law lived for a while. So they had known each other there a little bit. And when it just kind of came about that, I'm like, hey, I want to be involved in that, that festival this year. It's just too good of a festival. It speaks to the heart of what Kentucky is about in our bourbon industry. It's not just a, you know, there's nothing wrong with going to a big concert, you know, and having a great time, but my product isn't about that. My product's not doing a shot and moving on to the next stage. I want a place where people that came in from all over the country and other countries as well, that came in to learn about the heritage as well as what's new. And what better place? And so I reached out to her, and she immediately responded. And we're like, hey, this is what we've been doing. We sponsored a PGA event, you know, in the PGA in Lexington last year. Been on TV numerous. She was like, hey, absolutely. And we got together, and it just, and she said, well, what do you think about being our title sponsor? And I was honored. I was just floored. It was, you know, it was awesome just to be part of the VIP tent on, you know, the first night was going to be a great honor for me. When she said that, I'm like, yeah, we won't let you down. We're going to do everything we can. So it's going to be a fun, really fun weekend. Our distillery will be full operations by then. Our visitor center will be going, you know, for the summertime visits, tasting a lot of our different expressions over here in Georgetown. And we're just looking forward to having a great time in Frankfurt.
Well, fantastic. Yeah, we're big fans of Bourbon on the Banks. It's kind of our kind of premier show every year that we go to. Now, we go to a number of things, but Bourbon on Banks is kind of our that's where the majority of our listeners love to migrate to Kentucky is during that particular event. And it's just a big deal for us. We have a big you know, 20 by 40 tent, and it's just packed with people, and we have such a great time. So we're looking forward to it, and we thank you very much for being a main sponsor of Bourbon on the Banks. Anything we can do to help Diane and in that event is just fantastic. So
well, giving back to the White Oak community and everything else of, you know, the programs that they put back into Kentucky is just fantastic. So,
all right. Well, fantastic. Let's move on to this third and final sip of the day. This is a big bottle for you. This is your private stock. Can you tell us about it?
Release those a couple times a year. So it is that specific one, that mash bill. Whenever we come across in our business dealings, somebody who has accessibility to something really cool and unique, we try to grab it, you know, if we can. And this was one of them. We were talking with an old buddy of mine who was with Brown-Forman Exec, who knew Mike Safai, who was one of the original two founders of Rabbit Hole. And he owns a large, you know, coffee company now as well, but he never saw Rabbit Hole come to the market. He and his partner split up and never saw the $275 million payout that came down the line. So he wanted to get his brand out there, and we'll start working with him as well as my old buddy from Brown-Forman and helping Mike bring his recipe out. It's a very unique mash bill. This was made off of one of Ken Lewis's, I think it was Ken, his third customer that he did up at New Riff. This is all 8-year-old juice in here, and it is a 70% corn. It is 10% honey malted wheat, 10% honey malted barley, and then the high protein malted barley, another 10%, which is called distiller's malt. And that gets the cook going a little bit faster and controllable. You don't have to cook as hot a temperature from what we understand. And it should be just extremely, only 89 barrels of this ever made.
What was the corn content?
70%.
70, 10, 10, and 10?
Correct.
Wow.
Yep. Super great barrels selections on this. I believe they're all at least 18 month old age staves before they're crafted. The barrels are in tremendous shape, but should just jump out of your glass and showcase all kinds of oils. And I'll let the whiskey speak for itself. It does a much better job than I do.
So this is a 4-grain, but the wheat and the malt are both Honey malted,
yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Transcess.
Yep. Very expensive, difficult to work with. But I've had people taste this and they're like, Barry, what is this going to be? $800,000? And I'm like, no, guys, no. I said, I don't believe anything's worth $300 or should cost $300. I think things are worth what people are willing to spend for it. I've overspent in some people's eyes on products over the years that I just wanted. And other people have done the same that I'm like, why would you ever? So the individual consumer is empowered here, but we don't want to overcharge on our stuff. So this is still sets out their national average price at about $225 a bottle. And I truly think it drinks at 500 plus. So.
All right. Well, let's check it out. Cheers.
Okay. Cheers.
Wow. The nose has definitely got a softer effect on it. That must be that wheat giving it a little bit of softness on the nose.
And I think I've not worked enough with the distiller's malt juice before to, I know it's a high protein malted barley, so it adds a whole nother layers to it. But I think it might also have a little bit in there because it definitely adds some richness in the color. The barrels are just 3+ chars, and the color content out of this stuff is just magnificent. But it's not, should not be over woodsy, which a lot of wheaters can be, you know. I mean, too much wheat, my theory is that if you put too much wheat in it, then, you know, it takes forever for the barrels to mature. I mean, you can have 7-9-year-old stuff, and I think Willett does a great job with theirs. You know, that who's going to ignore that purple cap these days? But from what I've heard, is they struggled quite a bit to get to that point with the early weeders. But the mash bill, what they're doing now is fantastic. So, and obviously Buffalo Trace does a great job with wieners too. So,
all right. So I'm getting a very nice, soft nose on it, and I did taste it already, but I'm going to go from the nose to the palate real quick here, my analysis. Sure. And I'm going to say that this has got kind of a cereal, kind of like a, you remember Cream of Wheat?
Oh yeah.
It's got kind of a cream of wheat kind of nose to it, a little, like a little bit of cherry, a little bit of sweetness, like a honey sweetness. I don't know. It has anything to do with that honey roast, that honey barley or the honey
or wheat.
Wheat. But it does have like a honey, almost like a cream of wheat with a honey on it. And,
A lot of those barrels get honeycomb in them. Some of them pick up maple. Yeah, like a honeycomb, like a real
nice
wax, almost that waxiness, but just the unctuousness of honeycomb versus the sharpness of some honeys. So, yeah.
Wow, this is really different. Really totally different. An outlier. This one has nothing to do with the other two we just drank. Completely different. Okay. I could see the similarities in the last two.
Great.
But in this one, it's a different animal altogether.
Right.
And, wow.
And that's what when we come across really unique, rare stuff. I mean, I was not able to get all 89 barrels. You know, Mike's keeping quite a bit of them, but we got the lion's share of, I believe, of what he sold. And I'll have enough of this to be able to put it out for the next few years from this buy. And I'll have other stuff working that we may do in between, but I'll come up with, you know, a little different label expression to delineate them and separate them.
Man, I tell you, I was going cream of wheat with honey on it, but now that you said honeycomb, like I'm throwing my tasting notes out the window, and I'm all on honeycomb right now.
Yeah, I think of honeycomb.
It definitely is honeycomb.
Yeah, it is. And then there's in the mid palate, I pick up like mulberry cobbler kind of thing, that richness, that, you know, the baked on it, or sometimes it's plum on some of these barrels that you're just picking up and you're like, oh my gosh, these things have so much fruit, but then there's the layers of complete. I mean, these are kicking tobacco notes right now. The barrels at my crafting barn are just beautiful tobacco, sweetness, ripeness. Some of them I could drink one and that would be it for me as a consumer. You know, some people would just drain the whole bottle. But it's a treat. It's just one of those things you want to treat. And you take this down. I'm a Scotch fan. I love good Scotch too. I like my McCallums and the like. I think, anyways, you take this down to about in the low 90s, and it's really, as bourbon would go, it's as really close to being a 23-year-old McCallum as you're going to get that I've tasted.
Wow.
And I don't say that lightly, because I would like to be buried with a bottle in my casket of 23-year-old McCallum and a couple other things, because, you know, we're going to try to have a party wherever we go. But it's really a fun, and it's tough to blend. that mash bill and those barrels, they are so expressive to each other. They don't always play nice, but when they sing, I get it pulled and get in a bottle. I'm not mucking around. I'm not going to wait tomorrow. We are going to get that batch pulled, get it over into a tank, hold it, and then get it bottled and, you know, get proof down. So, but that was 492 bottles in that bat in that release there. I'll be working on another one this month.
I feel very blessed to have a bottle of this. I'll be honest with you. This is really good. This is something that is, when you have a collection of whiskeys, as you can imagine, a podcast host has,
I bet,
right? There's a few bottles that sort of elevate themselves to that very top shelf, right? There's a few bottles that make it to that top shelf. That one that you share with only your most cherished guests. Yep. This is going to be one of those.
Oh, thank you. That's the greatest,
definitely
greatest compliment I could ever have. So thank you so much.
This is just amazing. And I, you know what I want to do? I want to take a little bit of water. I want to take this bottle. I'm going to go sit out in that back room I was talking about before. And I want to play with proof a little bit, because I'd like to find that 23 McAllen.
It's, that batch, I have not tried it with, but the previous one definitely did. But I'd try it with a lot of the barrels, and I proof them down. I like to take them down, we call it challenging them. So I challenge them all the way down to below 80 just to see where if they fall apart, what people are going to experience if they do drop a rock and they take it too far. I'd rather waste my bourbon on, before consumer does. But yeah, that one there should drink real close to that Macallan when you get it down into the low 90s.
Wow, fantastic. So I'm just curious. I've never actually been on that journey that you're talking about. So this particular bottle is at 113.6 proof.
Yeah.
And if I were to take this bottle and a little bit of proofing water and go out and sit in my back room, how long would it take me to venture down from 113 down to, say, 85?
Yeah.
What's that process? What's that like?
Yeah, it's actually quite a simple mathematic equation. It'll get you a ballparking without taking your hydrometer out. But say you've got 100 gallons of 120 proof juice, and you want to take it down to, I got 120 gallons, 100 gallons. I'm going to add 20 gallons to that. What will it give me? So you're going to take your original volume you started, 100 gallons, divide it by your end result by adding 20 gallons of water. So divide that by 120. That'll give you that number. Then you multiply that times your proof, your cask strength proof, and that will give you real close. I believe that right there is probably going to put you at about 96 proof, that recipe, right in that ballpark. And so you can just add it. I always keep a graduated cylinder around, and whenever I'm taking it down, I'm pouring it back in there, getting my measurement. All right, now I take my eyedropper, and I'm going to add 1-2 milliliters into that, and then I'm going to proof it down again, and then it's going to give me my ballparking. Before we go to bottle, obviously, then we're going to get real finite with finding the true proof, which is what the hydrometer is reading at that temperature, and then putting it into the whiskey systems calculator, and it'll tell you what your true proof is.
Wow. And there's 40 drops per milliliter, right?
Correct.
Wow. So my problem is that as you're working your way down from 113 to, let's say, 85, math starts to get real hard after about around 92. Right. You're scratching your head, right?
Yeah, that's probably why the FFA probably want to make sure of that too. So, little disclosure, but
wow, this is phenomenal. This is a phenomenal pour. This is a great bottle of whiskey. It's something that I'm going to cherish. I'm going to share with as many people as I possibly can. It absolutely has been a walk up the ladder from each of these three expressions. Each one stepped up. And the first one, the select batch, was delightful. Yeah. I mean, it was really good.
If you go back and taste it now, it probably tastes better yet.
Yeah.
To me, your palate will probably be coated up a little bit with that weeder. It happens to me all the time in the tasting room, and when I'm doing it in my blending room. If I go backwards, I'm like, oh my God, this thing is so good. I got to get it. Then you're like, well, I proofed up my palate a little bit, got a little coating on it with that weeder there. And it's a little misleading, but enjoyment is enjoyment. Right,
so we've got all these listeners around the world that are hearing this podcast right now. And they're like, okay, you're talking about this stuff, but can I get it? Right. So where can they find your products in the market? What states are you available in? Are you available overseas? Can they mail order? Can they get it online? What's the story there?
Yeah. I mean, right now we're not available overseas. We've only been selling our product in market for about a year. So we are in Kentucky, obviously, Kentucky, Tennessee, statewide. Knoxville is coming on, fleshing out in the next few weeks. And then Georgia, Texas, Colorado, California, Oregon, Michigan, Ohio have all of our licensing done there now. So that's we'll be starting to ship out there in this next quarter. We are talking with, we should be launching Nebraska here a little bit. Barring a couple other things, they committed this month in talks with Kansas and Illinois and Massachusetts and DC, Maryland, Delaware, North, South Carolina, West Virginia, of course, Mississippi, Alabama. So it's, we're not going to say no to people, but we just want to make sure that we can always support our wholesalers and our retailers and our restaurateurs effectively. So we are hiring people. We just hired a person in Georgia and close in Michigan, but Kentucky, Florida, working backwards. They're going to put somebody in place there and find the right wholesaler fit there for it. I'm interviewing people right now, just started this week in Texas. So for a couple positions there. So we'll continue to expand to be able to get expressions and partake in as many of the bourbon festivals and events that we can. And then we just get to meet the consumers and they'll tell us that what we're doing right or doing wrong. You know, if we ever lose our humility about listening to the end consumer, otherwise, why the hell are you doing this?
Absolutely. I agree with you completely. Yeah. So you're building a facility in Georgetown, mm-hmm. Kentucky on the farm.
Yep. Big campus.
Where are we at? When's it going to be out there and available and ready for people to start charging in and demanding tastings?
Yeah. Well, my partner Darren is in charge of that. And he's given me that our first still should be operational, you know, right in that May to early June, depending on, you know, the weather, you know, good Lord willing, and the creek don't rise. And the weather has been kind of inclement, we'll say, for this winter. And then our visitor center will open right at that same time. Then we'll daisy chain in our other big pot stills over there so that by the time October or November comes around, we'll be finished off with all of our stills going live and coming up and producing. So we'll be able to take visitors here this summer and looking forward to as many people as we can. Love to put liquid to lips. That's what it's all about.
Awesome. We talked a little bit about new projects. You mm-hmm. kind of mentioned that there's a rye on your horizon. Yep. Is there anything else that you'd like our listeners to sort of keep in the back of their minds that to keep an eye out for here coming soon?
The rye would be probably the first. We'll have some other brands we'll introduce at some ranges and some different mash bills, the weeders, of course, at lower prices and lower age statements. But I'm a big fan of what American single malts are doing. And so there's some really great producers out there. I love Virginia. I love what North Carolina's doing. Tennessee's got some really solid stuff. I think Kentucky can do it too, of course. And we are looking into that. We are looking at other alternative productions. From that, Darren is his PhD is in food safety, securities, and chemical engineering. So he's a bit of a mad scientist that he wants to start playing, and he's doing it right now, playing with some clear liquids out of the distillery right now with his benchmark. There's his bench testing. So he's having fun today while I'm doing this, and I'm having a good time too. Get to enjoy some whiskeys here with y'all. So yeah, we're gonna have some fun with it. But the rye light whiskey. Love some great light whiskey. You know,
absolutely. I think it's great, especially with George Washington in your lineage. I mean, you've got to put out a white rye, right?
I would think so.
at some point,
it would behoove us to do so. I think, you know, capture a little bit of something on it. You know, but again, there's so many great expressions, and there's just only so many days in that you're on this earth. So we try to, why not? We're not going to be jack of all trades and masters of none. You know, we don't want to throw everything out there and not focus on certain things. But Darren will have pot stills that he can do custom runs for people. So if people want to come in and do it, everybody can come in and do barrel picks, you know, for groups and stuff. Like we had a conversation with California this morning. Let's do a still pick. Come in and do a still pick. Take the last 50 gallons off the still or something of one of his recipes. You know, find out which one. You know, I'll have 48, 60 cookers going at any given time. And we'll have a smaller, you know, 1,000 gallon, which is big to most people, be by far our smallest pot still. We can shut that down and start it up and run some fun stuff.
Now, there's something that I've thought about many times in the past. I'm like, okay, yeah. I mean, like,
I had not.
Let's bring like tasters in to try the white dog off the still and pick a section of whiskey that's come off the still and say, I like that. Put that in a barrel for me.
It can be so fun, isn't it?
It can be. I mean, that's just like, yeah, that's taking a look at what the master distiller does and saying, I like exactly what you produced today. Let's put that in the barrel and see what happens.
That's right. And why not grab the best of that heart? So,
absolutely.
Yeah. It's been a pleasure.
Well, Barry, it's been such a great time. I've had such a good time drinking through your whiskeys tonight. And it's so refreshing to have a new distillery come on with a very clear, focused mission. They know exactly what they want to do. And the market's out there. We know the market's out there, but you're very strict about what you're doing, and you want to make sure that you adhere to your principles and your vision. And if your vision includes what we just tasted tonight, I'm going to say you're going to be very successful.
Oh, thank you, Jim. That means a lot, because once you sell out, you sell out. And
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. We never got my partner, Bobby, talks about one of his favorite sayings that's become kind of a mantra around here, is that you never get rich by being greedy. And so that's one of our missions.
Well, I'd like to give you a chance to let all our listeners know where they can find you on the internet, on social media, TikTok, and I don't know if you do TikTok, but Instagram and Facebook and all the others. Well, how they can find you guys, how they can learn more.
Yeah, there's been some reviews on us out there on the TikTok that a lot of people are blowing up and getting a lot of messages from. But Instagram, obviously, with Limestone Farms Distillery, Instagram, our personal ones as well. And then, our website is www.limestonefarms.com, plural on the farms. So limestonefarms.com. It's pretty interactive. We're going to be introducing our new page on there shortly, which will help you find retailers and restaurants near you that carry our products. So that search engine is coming live shortly. So especially kind of timing most things as our distillery opens up here. And again, everything goes well, June we'll be able to host some really, really kick-ass stuff. So
awesome. And you listen to a number of states that you're in now, but people can also come to your website and order. And there's a few states deliver to.
Yeah. And it'll take them right over to Kentucky Bourbon Direct. It'll link right over there to their sales platform, and they'll handle all the fulfillment from there. But yes, we're approved in, the Nebraska and Arizona and Alaska and North Dakota, and New Hampshire and DC and Kentucky, which are the seven states that we can legally ship to. So.
Fantastic.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Barry. Thank you so much for providing your whiskeys to us to review and to share with our listeners. Thank you for taking the time out of your day to come on the show and talk about your product and your brand. It's been a blast. We've had such a great time. And I have to say, just a general statement here. These are exclusive and premium whiskeys. There's no doubt about it. These are not everyday little shelf bottles. These are bottles that should be in high demand and people should be looking for on the shelves.
No, thank you. That's all we could ever ask for. Thank you so much, Jim.
Awesome. Well, you can find the Bourbon Road on all social media outlets. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, all the social media outlets. You can find us wherever you are on social media. We do put out a show every single Wednesday. You'll find us interviewing somebody like Barry Downing from Limestone Farms. We always have a great show. We're always drinking whiskey. Sometimes, sometimes it's a music artist. Sometimes it's a chef or an author or something. But we're always drinking whiskey. We're always having a good time. We hope you'll join us every single week. But you can also find us on our website. We have our swag on there. We have our t-shirts and glasses and all our swag. We hope you take time to visit the website, thebourbonroad.com, and check us out. But until the next time you hear us, we'll see you down the Bourbon Road.